Welcome to Shem Adal Guriyah, Pastor Shoftim. Shoftim has a lot of mitzvot. One of the mitzvot is described in the beginning of Perek Chaf. When you go out to war, so there is a Kohen, Moshuach Milchama, there is a Kohen who is especially anointed for this purpose, who goes and gives the people a pep talk. Shema Yisrael, Atem Krevim Ayom L'Milchama, Oyveichem. Listen, O Israel, today you're going out to war against your enemies. Al yelach l'vavchem, let your hearts not be softened. Al tiru, al taktuzu, al tarsu mitneyem. Don't be afraid. Yashem alokeichem haholich imochem, lilochem lochem moideichem, oshia eschem. Because Hashem is going out before you, he's going to fight with your enemies, and he will ultimately save you. Then we're told how the shoftim, the officers of the people, offered the people certain exemptions, certain wartime exemptions that they can take advantage of, and they don't have to go out to war if they don't so desire. If anyone has built a new house and he hasn't yet dedicated it, he hasn't lived in it yet, so he's allowed to go back home, lest he die in war and someone else is going to live in this brand new house. If someone has planted a vineyard and he hasn't yet seen the fruit of the fourth year, the Terem Revoi, so he too can go home, lest he die in war and someone else is going to utilize the fruits of his vineyard. If someone has become betrothed to a woman and he hasn't yet finalized the marriage, he hasn't yet formally married her, so let him go home, lest he die in war and someone else is going to ultimately marry her. And furthermore, finally, if there's anyone here who's afraid and has a soft heart, let him go back to his heart, let him go back to his home rather. Let him not melt the hearts of his brothers as his heart is melted. If you're afraid, if you're fearful, so now would be the time to start going back home. On that last statement in Parakhov Pasukhes, so Rashi records the famous Machlokes HaTanoim as follows. Hayare v'racha levov, who is this person who is afraid and soft of heart? Rabbi Akiva Omer k'mashmo. Rabbi Akiva says, what you think it means is what it means. They're about to go out to war. Who's afraid? Yeah, makes sense. We're about to go out to war. People are afraid. Shei yochol lama b'tishrei ha-melchama b'neros cherev shlufa. This guy can't handle the notion of going out into war and seeing drawn swords. Parenthetically, just the way Rashi presents it from Rabbi Akiva, it's not that he's afraid, not that he's afraid something's going to happen in the war necessarily. I mean, again, you know, stands to reason people are afraid of going out into war, but it's almost like, you know, a neurosis of sorts, you know, like a person's afraid of water, a person's afraid of heights. You know, so he can't stand to see swords drawn. You know, it's a level of fear that goes beyond just the simple, I'm afraid because we're going out to war, and war is inherently a dangerous situation. It's a little bit more than that. That's Rabbi Akiva. In other words, the person who's afraid, who we're discussing over here, is literally a person who's afraid. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, Rabbi Yossi Aglili disagrees, and he says, Hayare me Averos Shabiyazo. We're not talking about someone who's afraid of getting killed in the war just because he's afraid of war. He's afraid that he's going to get killed in war because he feels that he's not deserving. He feels that he's a Baal Avera, that he's someone who's committed sins, and that the sins, Rahman al-Islam, are going to cause him to be killed in war. It's for that reason that the Torah allows the first three categories, the people who have just built a house, planted a vineyard, gotten engaged, you know, that they're allowed to go back. Those whole categories exist because of this last guy. We don't want to embarrass the person who's afraid to go out to war because of the sins that he possesses. Why should we out him as a sinner? Instead, you know, let everybody go back, you know, the first three categories included. And then when this guy goes, people shouldn't realize, they won't realize that this fellow doesn't want to go out to war, doesn't want to do so because he's a Baal Aveira, because he has Aveiros. If somebody sees that he's, you know, going home, He thinks that maybe he's one of the first three categories. Maybe this guy going home just got engaged, or he just built a house, or he just planted a vineyard. And this way nobody needs to know that he's the person who's returning from the battlefield because of the averos that he thinks are going to come back and bite him on the battlefield. So in other words, there's a profound sensitivity that the Torah has to somebody who is a Baal Avera. Okay, we understand he's a Baal Avera. He understands that he's a Baal Avera, but nonetheless, you know, we don't have to publicize the fact that the fellow is a Baal Avera, and the Torah will exempt other people from war in order to essentially cover up for this person. So, in the course of this discussion, the Maral introduces a number of, I think, very important ideas and very unique ideas in trying to understand the positions of both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi HaGlili about these various exemptions from war. Right? So, first of all, with regard to the position of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, the second position, that the guy who's Yare, the fearful person, is fearful not because of some kind of neuroses, but he's fearful because he's afraid that the averos that he's performed are going to not stand him well on the battlefield. So, and Rashi comments on that, that the whole reason that the other three categories were exempted were to cover up for this guy's averos. Thank you. Comments to Maral that in Lokein, if you're not going to say that the exemptions of the other three individuals are to somehow protect the anonymity of the sinner who's going home, my time was shiomus b'shil shabana bayis v'lo chanochom. Right? So why are we particularly worried about the guy who built a house and hasn't yet had a chance to live in it? Right? Why is it? It's a basic question that one has, you know, on this whole section of the Chumash. Okay, so this person has just embarked upon some new phase of his life. He's just built a new house. He's planted a new vineyard. He's just gotten engaged. And, yeah, we understand there's something very tragic about the fact that, you know, he's not going to be able to take advantage of that new stage of life he's going into. But let's be honest. Is it any more tragic than the fellow who's been married for 20 years with children, or married for 30 years with grandchildren, and is going to die in war? Is that's less tragic? I mean, truth is, you could argue the opposite. This person, you know, has been married for 20, 30 years, leaves behind orphans, you know, leaves behind a family that's struggling in his absence. The fellow who's engaged and dies, you know, it's very tragic on one level, but on another level, you know, there's less of there's less that's impacted upon by his tragic passing. Is it really more tragic that the guy has built a house and hasn't gotten the chance to live in it versus if he had been living in the house for 15, 20 years already? Maybe that's more tragic. You know, that the house is going to be left without the person who lovingly, took care of the house for such a long period of time. What is it specifically about these three cases that leads the Torah to exempt them from going out to war? So the Maral says that's exactly what's bothering Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili says there is no reason fundamentally to exempt these three individuals from going out to war. So it can only be that they're being exempted as a cover, as a way of maintaining the anonymity of the person who's a sinner, who in reality is exempted from going out to war because we know that he's going to be impacted upon.
The Kohen is saying, don't worry because of the Shem Yimachem.
Yeah.
What is God doing? Is he not looking out the sinners, or is he only looking out at the
Shem? Oh, so very, very good. So we'll get to that point. We'll get to that point a little bit later. Ela Torah continues the Maral. Ela Torah, Tiva says she Hashem will base of Yachnechen who pirush. So a name that Yachos and Machos who are there. We are Chos and Machos who are from Kolodayis. It must be. That's what prompts Rabbi Yossi HaGlili to say. The exemption of the first three individuals from going out to war must be just a cover-up for somebody else, because there really, when you think about it, there is no logical reason for exempting Dafka, these three individuals, from going out to war. So now let's take the question and turn it on its head, says the Maharal. In Torah, Hulu Rabbi Akiva, the Sober Shem Choser Machlas Aveira, in Cain, Loma Choser Machlas Lochon Cholabais. Okay, so we've explained why Rabbi Yossi Haglili says that the exemption of these three individuals must be just to cover up the guy who's a sinner. What do you do with the position of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says, the Yare Veracha Leva, the guy who's afraid, is not afraid because he's a sinner. He's afraid because, you know, he doesn't like blood, he doesn't like swords, you know, he doesn't like all that stuff that goes together with war. Right? He's not really cut out to be a soldier. Okay. So then, I understand why he's being exempted, but why are the first three people being exempted? If they're not a cover-up, so what is the logic behind exempting Davka of these three people? So the Maharaj has a fascinating answer. Yesh lo, ma? So the Rabbi Akiva calls their love with each of Bona Bais Velo Chanocho Ulefikach Yesh lo Harbe Mekatrugim Shlo Yisker Bais Vechein Lo Isha Ki Harbe Mekatrugim Yesh Al Ha'odam Kishi Erosa Lishkos Padova Vasotu Mekatrug Vishasa Sakana Ulefikach Omer Torah Pen Yomus Velo Yisker Machmas HaMekatrugim Shein Mekatrugim Vishasa Sakana. Says the Maral, the notion that these three people, the person who's just gotten engaged, the person who's just built a house, the person who's just planted a vineyard, the notion that they should return home is not just a psychological notion. Inherently, these three people are in a greater degree of danger. Why so? They're in a greater degree of danger from a heavenly perspective. Because whenever a person is just embarking on a new endeavor, in Shamayim, there are greater mekatrigim, there are greater prosecuting attorneys, so to speak, aligned against them in heaven. In other words, when a person comes and he's just about to start a new endeavor, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at that person's merits under the magnifying glass, and the bar for enabling that person to go on and to embark on this new endeavor is a higher bar. So in other words, these people are under the magnifying glass. They are indeed being scrutinized in heaven to a much greater degree than the guy who's been living in the house for 15 years or whatever it happens to be. Plus, says the Maral, we know that there's a concept that Hasat and Mekatzeg Meshachat Sakono, that if a person is already under the magnifying glass, he may feel the negative impacts of that, specifically at a time of heightened danger. So you put those two things together, says the Maral, and these three people are not just being let go because of psychological reasons. These three people are being let go because inherently they are in greater danger than the rest of the soldiers. And as such, you know, it's important, according to Rabbi Akiva, that they actually be dismissed. Right. So this guy isn't there yet, though, right? This guy is betrothed. Right, Eiras means he has Eirusin, but not Nisuin. So apparently that idea, I mean, again, nowadays it's not relevant because we do Eirusin and Nisuin back to death 10 minutes apart, but, you know, that notion that, you know, a chasson is considered to have his averos wiped away. You see from here that that's a concept specifically with nisuin, but not really with kedusha, right? In other words, he's still pre Yom Kippur at this point. Yeah, and he would not be exempted from the war. In other words, if he jumps the gun and says, you know, I'm going out to war, I might as well have a chuppah, right? So then. First of all, halakhically, he wouldn't be chosen me'archa mochama. That wouldn't entitle him to go home. And, you know, if anything, according to Maral's reason, that actually might serve as a greater source of protection in a divine sense while he's out there at war.
Are there other people who start new phases of their life working a job or new estate? He's expanding.
Oh, so very, very good. So if you give me a minute, let me actually continue a few lines in the Maral. If you don't mind, we'll come back in just a minute. I'll strike while the iron's hot. So the Maral himself goes on to say what's unique about these three scenarios in life. In Perek Hamad de Sota, Amina, we're told, on the very first daf of Masech de Sota, Arvayim Yom Koni Yitzir Tavlad, Baskol Yotzir Ve'omer Baskloni Laploni, Deis Ploni, Laploni, Sada Ploni, Laploni. Everybody quotes the first half of this Maimar Chazal. They forget about the second half of the Maimar Chazal. 40 days before the fetus is conceived in utero, a heavenly voice goes out and says, this person is destined to marry so-and-so, he's destined to live in such and such a house, and he's destined to acquire such and such a field. And everybody, of course, the first part of that with the Hasheret is very nice, you know, but nowadays, for whatever reason, you know, when we buy our first field, we don't have that same sense of, oh, my Hasheret, you know, doesn't ring in quite the same romantic sense, I don't know. But the Gemara says, you know, the Bat Kol addresses all three of those issues. The truth is, when you analyze it, these three things are the cornerstones of a person's existence. Ha'isha Ezer Kenegdo, right, the relationship between husband and wife, that's an obvious one. Habayis L'Dirasho, person needs a home, person needs a place to live. What about the field? So he says, V'Tzarech L'Adam was Panos Mimeno. The field represents the person's Panosha. Right, so the Maral himself waxes eloquent in other places about how ultimately all of our parnasa goes back to the fields. You know, he had a farmer's perspective. The Maral wasn't a farmer; he lived in Prague, a very cosmopolitan city. But he had the sense that ultimately all parnasa, you know, goes back to the fields, and even if you're not a farmer, ultimately everything is dependent on land. But one might take the words, I don't think Maral himself would say what I'm about to say, but it's in the lines, it's in the general approach of the Maral, and address to Shelley's question from before. Sada might be interpreted more broadly as a term for parnasa. Right? So in other words, the person's about to start a new job endeavor, he signed on, but he hasn't actually yet started. Again, I don't know whether in strict halakhic terms this would be true, but certainly in hashkafic terms, that's similar to the fellow who planted the vineyard and hasn't had the opportunity to be able to eat from its fruits. In other words, he's embarked on some kind of new parnasa endeavor, but he's not quite there yet. So these three things, says the Maral, the three things that are mentioned in Sota correspond to the three things from which, you know, on behalf of which one is able to be chosen me'ocha mechama, to come home from the battlefield. If he's embarking on one of three significant endeavors in life, he's about to get married, he's about to move into a house, he's about to make full usage of his fields, of his vineyard, you know, that which is his main parnasa. So that's a time where there are mekatzrigim in Shamayim, where in Shamayim they look down and see, let's see whether the person is deserving of embarking on this new phase in his life. And there are particularly dangerous times for this person who finds himself in a dangerous situation, you know, out in the middle of the battlefield. Maral adds another thing. What exactly is this potential kitrug in Shamayim? And again, we just explained it, you know, on a simple level, that, you know, he's about to embark on some kind of great new phase in his life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see whether he measures up to be able to be worthy of this new phase in his life. So the Maral adds another point to that. Shem HaKadosh Yisir Sablad Nigzer La'acher. Who knows? Maybe the wife that you're about to marry, or the field that you're about to acquire, or the house you're about to move into, was really destined for somebody else. So if it was destined for somebody else, well, how does that work? You know, our Avraham Yom Kodi is here at Sablon, right? And it was 40 days before the fetus is formed, so this was already predetermined. Happy to go to somebody else. So, right to Maral, the Gemara says in Moed Katan, that there's a concept of Shema Yikatmenu Acher Berachamim, that even once that decree has been made 40 days before the fetus was formed, you can overturn the decree. If you daven right, if you daven well, you can end up with the wife that was destined for somebody else. Or you can end up with the field or the house that was destined for somebody else. But you know what? If you end up with someone or something that was destined for someone else, the scrutiny that you're subjected to in Shamayim when you're about to embark on that endeavor is even greater than the scrutiny you would have been subjected to otherwise. In other words, you don't really deserve to be with this person. You don't really deserve to be in this situation. It's only because you davened really well. Okay, but if you davened, you know, and it's all because of the fact that you davened very well, and therefore you got, you know, pushed to the head of the line, pushed ahead of somebody else, you really better be deserving, because otherwise you'd just be pushed back to the original place. It's because of that that there's potentially a kisser on him. And now, says the Maharal, based on that, we understand that which the Pasuk says. We're afraid that this guy who's just about to get married, just about to move into the house, he's going to go out to the war, he's going to die, and someone else is going to marry this woman. Someone else is going to marry, move into the house. Someone else is going to take over this field. Why do you have to add someone else is going to take it over? The tragedy from the point of view of the soldier is that he's dead. You know, the tragedy is that I didn't get to marry my wife, my intended wife. I didn't get to move into my intended home. The fact that somebody else takes over in my place is really rather irrelevant to me, you know, once I'm at that point already. So what does the Torah have to stress? The Ish Acher Yikachenu, Ish Acher Yachnechenu. Says the Maharal, you know who the Ish Acher is, the other guy? It's the other guy who really was meant for this woman. It's the other guy who was really meant for this field. It's the other guy who was really meant for this house. You know, that's the Ish Acher. And the Torah is mentioning that, not that per se that makes things worse, but that explains why there might be a particular kitzrug against this individual, because who knows whom he might have displaced. Again, in the big scheme of things, you know, to get to this point where he is right about now. Well, it does work, but the fact
work if the true fiance or the true owner of the field is going to take it over and you're going to get killed, so he can take
it. Right, but so that's only one scenario. In other words, that's not the only scenario that might happen. But in other words, it could very well be that you dive it really hard, and you'll end up, you know, marrying this woman, getting this field, you know, getting this home, and you'll live happily ever after. In other words, the Pasuk is not saying that this fellow is necessarily going to die in the war, but there's a heightened possibility. And again, not just because he displaced somebody, but, you know, the circumstances, you know, the fact that he's about to embark on a new endeavor, the fact that, you know, it's the Shabbat HaKala, it's the time of danger, all of these factors work together against them. So that's, yeah.
So,
again, the fact that we can say, so to speak, time of the crow based on the Maharal doesn't necessarily, you know, it's just giving the reasoning for the Pasuk, doesn't necessarily impact on the Halacha. In other words, I don't know about the Halacha. You know, the Halacha talks about a Kerem, it talks about a vineyard, right? You know, so I don't know that that applies necessarily to getting a job in Goldman Sachs. But the idea, conceptually, you know, even if it's not true halachically, there's truth to it hashkafically. Yeah.
Maybe the person that got something to steal then it wasn't a shed to go against. Maybe there was something lacking in something selfish.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Again, all of this is... all of this... No one's saying that for sure the person is going to die, but just there's a heightened possibility, you know, because of things.
This notion that the Maharal talks about the prosecutorial agents who are hovering about this person who's embarking on something new. Where does he derive that? What's his source for that? Is it just
because
he's the Maharal?
Right. So he actually, Rabbi Hartman in his notes, quotes the Maharal in Seferis Yisrael, one of the Maharal's other works, who relates this idea from a Yerushalmi and Tainus. Yerushalmi and Tainus writes that why did the Chet HaEgel happen when it did? because at that very moment, the Luchos had been given to Moshe, but not yet transmitted to the Jewish people. Okay, so what's the significance of that? So Maral understands that what Yerushalmi is saying is that it was the beginning of the endeavor of giving the Torah to the Jewish people. And all beginnings are fraught with potential mess-ups. Right? So in other words, the Chet HaEgel comes about specifically at that point as the beginning of the giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael happens. That endeavor is just getting underway. As the Maral basically says, based on this Yerushalmi, had the Luchos been delivered to Klal Yisrael, maybe the Chet HaEgel wouldn't have happened. Had he gotten there a little bit earlier, maybe the Chet HaEgel wouldn't have happened. Right? It's all because it was the beginning of the endeavor that carries such a potential for, you know, for mishap.
Isn't that also the beginning? That when the
Bnei Yisrael, again, no one's saying that by definition, whenever a beginning of an endeavor is underway, things will go wrong. We're just saying things have a better chance of going wrong, you know, at the beginning of an endeavor. What's that? Right, Ephraimi. But first of all, you know, the Gemara Avodah Zarah says that God, Kiviyachol, enticed the Jewish people to engage with Chet HaEgel, you know? In other words, he pushed them in a certain direction. And again, I don't think he's necessarily saying that, you know, it's from Hashem, it's from people. In other words, there's a tendency for things to go wrong at the very beginning of an endeavor. Maybe that's what Chazal mean elsewhere when they famously say, Kol ha'atzalos kasha. All beginnings are difficult, you know, not just in a, not just in the sense, oh, it's always hard to begin something new. No, but in Shemayim. In Shemayim, they give you a hard time when you begin something new. You know, it's not an easy thing. But let me just conclude this last little stickle from the Maral. So the Maral writes, so some of that's the Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili, this whole explanation as to why there's a particular heightened possibility that these three people are in danger when they go out to war, that's all Rabbi Akiva. What about Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Rabbi Yossi Aglili says there's no real reason for these three people to go home from war. They're only being sent home from war to cover up the Yare Virach Aleva, the Yare Miaveros Shabiyado, the Kaius Asrei of the Averos that he has. So the Maral, unbelievably, says as follows. You know what Rabbi Yossi Aglili holds? Milchama, a war, is not called Shas Sakana. It's not called a time of danger. Okay, maybe if you're back at the office, you know, sort of coffee to people. But I'm report, what do you mean it's not called the time of danger? Right? Listen to these words. The Eino Yare Klal Shem O Yomus. You don't have to be worried that you're going to die. Ki Hashem Holechi Moyen. The Ein Tan Shas Sakana Klal. It's what Shelley said before. The Kari Moshuach Nochama gets up and tells the people, Al Tiru, don't be afraid. Ki Hashem Holechim Holechi Machem. Hashem is walking with you. Boom! Milchama is no longer shasakama. You know, war is no longer considered to be a time of danger. Okay, what does that mean? Nobody ever died in a war. I mean, what does that mean? So I think what the Maral is saying, as incredible as it is that once the Kohen Mashiach Milchama provides this assurance, there's no inherent sakana in war, more so than in a normal situation. People die normally also, right? But in other words, there's no heightened degree of sakana that's significant in the time of war once the Kohen Mashiach Mochama makes his promise on behalf of the people. No, so he's right. Since the Maral, let me just read this. In Cain, Lama Amar Kosov Lachzar, right? So then why do these people have to go back? It's only l'chakos l'chakos l'mishpil achay to cover up for those people going out back for chay. The imlo yachzor, because if that person who's sinful doesn't go home, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu imahem. God's not going to be with them. So he's not being overly sensitive. He's right. He realizes that this whole war is going to run based on the spiritual level of the Jewish people, not on the physical tactics or the like. He's actually making an informed decision by going home. You're right. I'm a Baal Aveira. I really should not be with the people, because then the promise of the Kohen Mashiach Milchama is not going to be carried out in the way in which we would like it to be carried out. An amazing statement of Emunah, you know, that the Maharal sees in the words of Rabbi Yossi. It's just a wonderful logistical thing. So first of all, right after Maariv, as I mentioned, we'll have the opportunity to meet Kiddush Levana, so I think we're going to end the Maariv here for tonight. There's Kiddush Levana, then there's the Siyam, a lot of stuff going on, so we'll do that. Next week, Be'ezus Hashem, we'll have the Shir Maariv Tuesday night instead of Wednesday night, so just adjust accordingly, mark your calendars, and we'll pick up Tuesday night, Be'ezus Hashem, next week.